This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Social Security is the federal entitlement program grabbing all the headlines nationally, but in the states, governors say Medicaid is a much more immediate crisis. Medicaid provides health coverage for 52 million of the nation's poor. As the population ages, the program's price tag has ballooned. In this year's budget proposal, President Bush asked Congress for a $40 billion cut in federal funding for Medicaid, which would leave the governors with some unpleasant choices. Many have proposed trimming benefits. Several governors have floated ideas to restructure the decades-old program or use technology in innovative ways to save some money. Some states are considering a hike in vice taxes. In a few minutes, Democrat Kathleen Sebelius, governor of Kansas, and Governor Bob Taft of Ohio, a Republican, join us to talk about health care, budgets, and Medicaid. Later in the program, a return to Neverland. We'll talk with the writer with the daunting task of coming up with a sequel to Peter Pan and your letters. But first, Medicaid. We want to hear how this issue is playing out where you live. Is your state scaling back benefits or proposing to overhaul the system? If you're a Medicaid recipient, give us a phone call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. As we mentioned, most governors have responded to Medicaid's growing financial burden by proposing cuts. Democrat Kathleen Sebelius of Kansas wants to raise taxes and expand health care coverage. She joins us by phone from her office in Topeka. Welcome to Talk of the Nation, Governor.
Thank you, Neil.
As I understand it, Medicaid takes up more than half of your state's budget now. How can you pay to expand it?
Well, actually, we're not at the halfway point. It's about less than 30% of our overall state budget, but it is growing. So we're on the low side compared to a number of states around the country. And frankly, we think, at least for women and children, and that's where our expansion is primarily aimed, it's a very cost-effective program to provide health insurance coverage. Absent that coverage, costs for everybody who has insurance actually continue to skyrocket.
And how would you pay for that?
Well, what we've proposed is a cigarette tax increase of 50 cents a pack to expand the coverage for children and some working parents. Smoking is very linked to high health costs, and frankly, people are very sensitive to the fact that smoking does two things. It both can provide some important revenue for health benefits, which will help the 10% of Kansans who currently don't have insurance coverage, but also higher cost cigarettes discourages teenagers from starting to smoke, and that's a very good health benefit in the long run.
Do these calculations include the prospect of federal cuts?
Right now, Neil, it's almost impossible to figure out what exactly Congress will do. I think governors are pretty united. We were together at the end of February with our counterparts from the federal government and feel that cuts in Medicaid at this point are not a very appropriate way to look at balancing the federal budget. All it will do is throw our health care situation into even higher crisis. And right now, there are more people on Medicaid in the country than on Social Security. So we would suggest that more attention be paid to discussing with governors the long-term prospects, particularly of the older population who's been shifted to the states. Their nursing home coverage, their pharmaceutical coverage, which is very expensive, is really what the cost driver is currently in Medicaid.
You're a Democrat, as we mentioned, suggesting a tax increase in a state with a legislature dominated by Republicans. What chance do you think your proposal has got?
Well, it's currently under consideration in the legislature. We also face some school challenges. So our legislature is trying to grapple with two very critical issues at the same time. To me, they're the most important economic issues we can deal with. All the incentives we put on the table to keep good jobs and lure businesses to Kansas are sort of irrelevant unless we have long-term stable funding to ensure excellent schools in communities across the state and low-cost, affordable health care. We won't keep good jobs in Kansas. So I think we need to tackle both of these issues and do it in a very progressive way.
Yet, if it doesn't happen, cuts would be the only alternative. You have to balance your budget. There's no option there.
Well, that's absolutely true. And right now, we don't have any cuts in the program. I've been proud of the record over the last couple of years. When I came into a state that had only $12 million in the bank, that we have not cut social services, nor have we cut education funding. We've found a way to streamline overhead costs, to stretch our resources to pay for those two most important services. So cuts are really not the issue. The issue is whether or not we want to take the very important step to ensure all Kansas children, and I think that may be critical for the future, and it can be done in a pretty cost-effective way. We're not talking about raising the eligibility level. We're really just talking about aggressively recruiting and enrolling the kids who currently don't have health insurance available to them and making sure that they have enrollment for preventive care for their shots to get issues checked out before they hit school and are ready to be good students.
But I'm still not sure what you would do if the legislature declines to go along with this $50 million cigarette tax.
Well, that will mean that we won't expand the rolls. The budget currently funded includes an increasing caseload, which all of us are experiencing since a number of private business owners are dropping insurance. That's already in the budget. The additional money would allow us to reach out and enroll even more kids.
Is this the number one priority for you?
Actually, I have a 1A and 1B. School funding, which right now is on the calendar as a Supreme Court-ordered initiative, is also critical. But they go hand in hand as far as I'm concerned, because solving one without solving the other one really doesn't position us very well to be a prosperous state in the future or position our children to be good students when they hit school.
Governor Sebelius, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks
for having
me. Appreciate
your time. Kathleen Sebelius is governor of Kansas, a Democrat. She joined us by phone from her office in Topeka. Later on the program, we'll be joined by Republican Bob Taft, the governor of Ohio, to talk about the situation in his state. Kansas is just one of many states grappling with the rising cost of Medicaid. For a nationwide perspective, we turn now to Diane Rowland, executive director of the Kaiser Foundation's Medicaid program. She joins us from a studio at Kaiser's headquarters here in Washington, D.C. Nice of you to join us today.
Thank you for having me, Neil.
How representative is Kansas's approach to Medicaid funding at this point?
I think the governor clearly laid out what the challenge for all governors is in trying to provide adequate and affordable health care to their citizens, as well as provide for the long-term care needs that the elderly and people with disabilities turn to Medicaid to help address, at the same time as their revenue growth has slowed and they've got a lot of other pressures on their state budgets. So her attempt to really reach out and expand enrollment at this time is really a unique situation, given that other governors are looking at cutting back, but it is where many of the states have seen it necessary to go just to provide the basic health services their citizens need.
And the go in terms of cutbacks, Tennessee, I think about 350,000 people may be cut.
Well, I think that is where the rubber has met the road with Medicaid, that in the last economic downturn, the state's revenues were declining. The cost of health care for all of us, including for the Medicaid population, was growing. Enrollment was increasing in Medicaid because more people were losing their job-based coverage and moving into the lower income groups that qualify for Medicaid. So we had a cost crisis in most states where the budget could not sustain the growth in the program. The federal government helped out during the last year by providing some additional federal revenues to help the states weather this crisis, but now that fiscal relief has ended, and now we're looking at the prospect of reductions in federal support, not increases. So I think all states are taking a very hard look at their Medicaid programs, trying to figure out where they can save some dollars on prescription drug spending, trim back on some of their nursing home spending, and in many cases make the hard decision to actually reduce benefits and reduce eligibility for some of their neediest citizens.
We want to know what's happening in your state. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And let's begin with Eric. Eric's calling from Boulder, Colorado.
Hello, yes. Thanks for having me on the program. I wanted to just make sure that people understood the fact that the trickle-down effect that cuts in Medicaid have on the nonprofit community. I'm the executive director of a small nonprofit in Boulder County, Colorado, and one of our programs is to operate a group home for youths, adolescent boys between the ages of 15 and 18. Medicaid is a primary funding source for us to pay for our daily costs. As it is right now, with the local contributions and state contributions combined, that only covers about 50% of our operating costs. And because of these cutbacks and already what's coming down the pike, our local mental health services has been cut back dramatically, and we created a unique collaboration in order to create this foster care home.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with this is that it's already very difficult. I'm having to fundraise about 60% of our budget as it is, and now it's going to look like that's going to increase more and more. And programs like mine simply are not going to be able to function in this environment. And I think it's important to realize that.
Diane Rowland, is Eric alone?
I think Eric is joined by many who are part of our vital healthcare safety net across the country that take care of individuals who fall through the cracks in our health insurance system and who have special health needs. In fact, Medicaid is the major supporter of our public hospitals, many of our community health centers, and as the pressure on Medicaid budgets grows, unfortunately, one of the first places that governors turn is to cut back on provider payments and to freeze provider payments, which leaves many providers like Eric falling short at a time when the need for their services is increasing.
Eric, thanks for the call. If you've got 15 seconds more, you can have the time.
Yes, I just want to point out the fact that the alternatives, because these kids that are in foster care or eligible for foster care in the custody of our local social services need some place to be. So a lot of them are sitting in juvenile detention facilities, high-cost residential treatment facilities, when they don't really need to be, and they could be in programs like ours, but we just can't exist anymore.
Eric, thanks very much for the call, and good luck.
Thank you for the time.
Bye-bye. We're talking about how states are coping with the rising cost of Medicaid, what's going on where you live. 800-989-8255. Email totn@npr.org. Back after the break, I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking today about the rising cost of Medicaid. The program is on the verge of bankruptcy in Mississippi. In Florida, the governor is talking about privatization, and that all comes all before the federal government's proposed cuts. What's happening where you live between rising costs and limited budgets? What solutions would you like to see? Our number is 800-989-8255. The email address is totn@npr.org. Our guest is Diane Rowland, Executive Director of the Kaiser Commission on Medicaid and the Uninsured. In a few minutes, Governor Bob Taft of Ohio will join us to talk about the situation in his state. Before we go to that, Diane Rowland, we sort of blithely mentioned the ballooning, soaring, rising costs of Medicaid. Is simply the aging of the population what's driving this?
Actually, there are a number of things that are driving Medicaid costs upward. The largest source of increase has been enrollment, really the downturn in our economy that left more and more people without health insurance, so that Medicaid had to pick up the cost of their medical insurance during our last economic downturn, has been the driving force over the last 3 years. But the real cost in the program is the cost it pays for the long-term care needs of our elderly population and people with disabilities. And that accounts for about 70% of overall Medicaid spending. So when governors and others are looking at their program, they often look first at the cuts in the health insurance role of the program, because that's where they have the greatest control over eligibility. But really, when you look at the dollars in the program, the driving force is the care the program is providing to the aged and the disabled. And a lot of that is driven by gaps in the Medicare program, where Medicaid fills in for long-term care assistance. It's been filling in for prescription drug coverage. It's been helping with Medicare premiums. And those expenditures account now for 42% of all Medicaid spending, just to fill the gaps in Medicare for Medicare beneficiaries.
Let's get another caller on the line. Charles is with us from Mesa, Arizona.
Hello, Neil. Thank you for having me on the show.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to comment on the situation in Arizona. I used to work with a hospital out here in the billing department, and one of the biggest things that we faced was getting patients to be able to pay bills. And a lot of times we ended up writing those accounts off as a result of their inability to pay them. I was wondering what the chances of our going to a socialized medical system as opposed to a private system, which we currently have.
Mm-hmm. Diane Rowland, that's, I guess, a grand solution that some people are talking about on the federal level. Is that at all in the cards, do you think?
I think right now we're looking at how to sustain and pay for the coverage that we now provide through Medicare and Medicaid, and many have argued that it might be more effective to transition to some sort of a more single socialized approach that was a single-payer system, but I don't think that's in the immediate cards as we deal with state pressures fiscally and with a rising deficit at the federal level for the federal government to take on more responsibility there. I would also say that what is probably in the cards is that we're talking about potentially increasing cost sharing under Medicaid as a way for the states to be able to make the program a little more affordable at that level. And I think Charles will find that in the billing department, the uncompensated bad debt will rise in the coming years, not get solved by social insurance.
Mm-hmm. The other thing I noticed, too, is that the patients have just an inability to pay for what medical care they're receiving. The Social Security income is insufficient to support what they need. And then on top of that, what little insurance they can afford is insufficient for covering the cost of their medical care.
You're absolutely right. We're talking about people on these programs who are living on $8,000, $9,000 a year, often for a family of two or three, where what seems like a small amount of cost sharing, $5 a visit, adds up quickly and is unaffordable in that family budget. So many providers do argue that increasing cost sharing within the Medicaid program is just another way of shifting the cost of the program onto providers.
Yeah, and in Arizona, we have the Access Plan that covers, it's a state plan to help with medical costs, and even that plan, even if it does take the cost away from the patient, it leaves the cost with the medical providers.
Charles, thanks very much.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Let's go now to Ken. Ken's with us from Sonora, California.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, why put a Band-Aid on the solution by taxing 50 cent a pack on cigarettes, maybe something like a quarter every can of beer and a dollar every bottle of wine or on the spirit would clear this problem up in a hurry?
We mentioned vice taxes are going up in some places, or at least proposed to in Kansas. Anywhere else? And are they considering alcohol as well as tobacco, Diane Rowland?
I know that sin taxes, alcohol, tobacco, wine, have always been considered a much easier way to raise revenue than to try to get an income tax or other sales tax increase. I know that they did talk in Mississippi, where they're having some similar budget problems, about at least a tobacco tax, but I'm not sure that we've seen that broadened in recent years at the state level.
Ken, thanks for the idea. You may be taken up in state houses across the country even as we speak.
Well, I thank you. I just think that would clear it up. I know a lot of people that smoke less than a pack of cigarettes a day, but I know a lot of people that drink 8-9 beers a day.
Okay. Drive carefully there, Ken.
Okay.
Right. Bye-bye. Ken's idea is not the only innovative approach in Florida. Governor Bush has proposed changes that would resemble, in some ways, private managed care programs. Tell us a little bit about that.
The governor's proposal in Florida is basically to give some of the Medicaid beneficiaries a private account that they can use toward the purchase of either an insurance plan that can provide coverage for them or to help pay directly for some of their medical expenses. So it converts from the Medicaid program that purchases care on behalf of its beneficiaries to giving more individual responsibility and choice. What is unknown about that program at this time is actually how it would operate, how it would adjust for the very different levels of illness within the Medicaid population. because we know that a very few people account for the majority of our health care spending, and how those accounts would be divided up remains a very open question.
Now let's go to the state of Ohio. Lawmakers there are considering a plan that would trim Medicaid benefits. Bob Taft is the governor of Ohio, a Republican. He joins us by phone from Cincinnati. Governor Taft, very good of you to be with us today.
Neil, it's my pleasure.
Cuts on the table for Medicaid in Ohio?
Unfortunately, we're facing a major, unaffordable, unsustainable increase in Medicaid budget without reducing the rate of growth. So, unfortunately, we've had to propose some painful steps. We're proposing to freeze some of our provider rates and to reduce some others. We're also, unfortunately, proposing to eliminate certain kinds of services for our adult population, not for children, but, for example, optometry and dental services for adults, and then also reducing the level of income for adults to be eligible for Medicaid from 100% down to about 90% of the poverty level. These are steps we take very reluctantly. We're still going to see huge growth in our overall spending at the state level. We'll be spending about $600 million more in 2 years from now than we're spending this year, even under the budget that I have proposed. Pharmaceuticals continue to escalate. Our populations grow, more elderly and disabled, greater caseload grows. So it's a huge challenge for Ohio and probably every other state in the country.
What are you hearing from your citizens about this plan?
Well, there's concern out there, obviously. And no one likes to take these kinds of painful steps. We're trying to preserve services to our children. Particularly, we cover children up to 200% of poverty, and we're trying to, you know, protect them and their services. We're trying to continue to support, you know, our elderly and disabled populations who are in our nursing homes. But nobody likes the reductions. So obviously, there's a number of groups who will come in to the state legislature and testify in opposition to them. But we have an obligation, unlike the federal government, to balance our budget we can't sustain a rate of growth in Medicaid that's 8, 9, 10%, you know, more than 3 or 4 times how fast our revenues are growing, even in good times.
Mm-hmm. Governor Sebelius of Kansas, we spoke with her earlier in the program, proposed a tax increase on tobacco. Is something like that in the cards for Ohio?
Well, we're proposing a tax reform plan will help our economy grow in Ohio, and we hope will strengthen our tax base in the years to come. I don't think the legislature is going to propose a tax increase in this budget.
So at the same time you're talking about these big cuts in Medicaid, you're also talking about a tax decrease.
No, our total revenues will grow under my budget probably, you know, 3% or so at least per year. Our spending will increase in our budget. As I said, our Medicaid mm-hmm. spending will grow by $600 million, just state share, over the next 2 years. So we're just trying to slow the rate of growth to something that's affordable for the people of Ohio.
Now, this, again, is before the federal budget is adopted. If the president's proposed cuts in Medicaid funding go through, how would that affect you?
Well, it's not clear yet. There are some proposed changes in the president's budget that would cost Ohio some money, but the president and the Secretary of Health and Human Services, Mr. Leavitt, are also proposing some changes to give states some additional flexibility and ability to control some of our expenditures. So there could be some good news, but there's also some bad news in the federal budget proposal.
And are you thinking about other ways to restructure, other innovations that might at least reduce the impact?
Yes, we are, Neil. We're trying to get more folks not to go into nursing homes, but go into home-based care. We're increasing that budget somewhat. We're proposing a pilot project for assisted living. We also want to do enhanced care management for our elderly and our disabled populations to try to make sure they get the most appropriate care, but also the most cost-effective care.
As you look at this down the road, I mean, this has always been a state-federal partnership. As you look at this down the road, people are saying this model is unsustainable. Which party has to pick up more of the tab? Who's got to step up here?
Well, it's really a partnership. And my view is that if the federal government would give us more flexibility as to what kind of services we provide and whom we cover, that the states can do a better job of managing our budgets. They'll still grow, but we'll have more control to get the services to people who most need the services at an affordable price. And if we do that, then the federal government benefits as well in terms of their balanced budget challenge, because, after all, the federal government pays about 60% of the cost of Medicaid in Ohio.
And so this would work out for both. But with the prospect of federal reductions, is the government in Washington keeping up its end of the bargain, do you think?
Well, we have concerns, obviously, about the budget as proposed, and we're trying to find out more about the cost savings initiatives and the flexibility initiatives. But I'm encouraged by Secretary of Health and Human Services Mike Leavitt, a former governor who I believe sincerely wants to create some changes that will help both the state and the federal government, and also preserve the safety net of health care as much as possible in this country.
Governor Taft, thank you very much for joining us today.
Neil, thank you very much.
Appreciate your time. Bob Taft is governor of Ohio and joined us by phone from downtown Cincinnati. We're talking about the crisis in funding for Medicaid, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Diane Rowland, the executive director of the Kaiser Commission on Medicaid and the Uninsured, is still with us. I wonder, you were listening to Governor Taft. Of course, he's in a bind like every other governor.
Yes, and he's attempting many of the ways that all the governors have tried to rein in costs, looking at controlling drug costs, looking at provider payments, and reducing eligibility. I think, though, what he's really pointing out is that Medicaid is the safety net of our health care system, and it's in fact become a victim of rising health care costs, of our growing uninsured population, where more and more low-income families can't get health insurance through the workplace and are turning to Medicaid for assistance, of our growing need for ways to address the long-term care needs of our aging population and helping people with disabilities both get the health care they need and the long-term care services. So all the hard things in our health care system are falling at the bottom to Medicaid to take care of as a safety net. And what happens when we don't put the resources in to sustain that program is that the individuals who depend on Medicaid have nowhere to go but to try to seek some care from providers who have no way to recoup the costs that they have for that population, as our first caller so aptly pointed out.
Mm-hmm. Let's get another caller on the line then. Jackie. Jackie's calling from Kent, Ohio.
Thank you for taking my call.
Hi.
I have been bedridden for 5 years with multiple sclerosis, and friends have been taking care of me. I was told I could apply for help from the state, but when I did, I was told that over half of my disability income would have to go to pay for 32 hours a week of home health care. And that would mean I could pay my rent, but I wouldn't be able to pay my utilities. What are people like me supposed to do except just die and make it more convenient for the politicians?
Diane Rowland, you described Medicaid as the safety net. Obviously, some people fall through the safety net.
And I think that really is the problem and the hard choice that governors are facing, is that when individuals like yourself can't get access to coverage through Medicaid, there's often nowhere else to go because it is the program that fills in the gaps in our healthcare system and really makes other pieces of our system workable.
Hmm. Jackie, as you look ahead to this, you're not getting Medicaid now.
No.
And obviously this would become even less available to you.
Yes, sir.
All I can say, Jackie, is that we wish you the best of luck.
Well, I would like to see you do a show talking to some people about what people like me are supposed to do when there is no other place to go, because we keep hearing about the cuts they're going to make, but not exactly what's going to happen to people like me, and there are a lot of us. But thank you for the show.
And Jackie, thanks for the thought. Mm-hmm. We appreciate it.
Goodbye.
We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll take a few more of your questions on Medicaid, and we'll find out about the further adventures of that one boy who wouldn't grow up, Peter Pan. Guess he won't need Medicaid coverage. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Thank you.
Let's finish up our discussion on how states are coping with rising Medicaid costs. Diane Rowland, the executive director of the Kaiser Commission on Medicaid and the Uninsured, is our guest. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, and the email address is totn@npr.org. Let's get another caller on the line. And this is Petra in San Diego, California.
Hi. How are you, Neil?
Very well. Thank you.
I have a couple. Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, sorry. I thought I lost you for a second. I have a couple of comments relevant to especially what Diane said. I'm a paramedic in the 911 system, and doing that job affords you a view of how these issues affect the general population that I think is really unique to pre-hospital emergency care. What concerns all of us in the 911 system is that we've seen an increasing use of the 911 system for primary care. You know, there are so many people that don't have any health coverage.
And in the same way that they use emergency rooms as their regular doctor,
exactly.
More and more.
Exactly. And we filter even on behalf of the ERs. You know, we don't necessarily transport every patient. We end up with a lot of 911 calls that aren't acute care calls. You know, they're non-emergent issues. And
well, to what degree is this 911 system dependent on Medicaid?
Well, very much so. And unfortunately, that's another problem. Our recovery of costs is diminishing. Most of our patients, I guess on an actual statistical figure, but considerably more than half of our patients are uninsured and mm-hmm. you know, below the poverty level. There seems to be, and I'm not sure how this disparity occurs or what causes it, but there seems to be a tendency for you know, the more someone's insured or covered, the less they call 911, generally speaking, you know. I think people, you know, we're mandated to treat no matter what, and it's why we do it. You know, it's certainly not for the money.
Well, Diane Rowland, let me ask you, is this another aspect of the problem that we're looking at that Petra is talking about?
We clearly know that individuals who are without health insurance don't get some of the early primary and preventive care that might prevent them from having to call 911 or show up at an emergency room. And I think one of the reasons that a governor like Governor Sebelius is trying to extend coverage to more low-income adults is to try and provide them with that earlier access that will reduce the need for calling 911 or coming into an emergency room to get care. Really what we're seeing here is the effect of having 45 million Americans without health insurance, and that number is growing substantially. And I think what many fear from the cuts that may happen in Medicaid is that instead of making progress in addressing our uninsured problem, we're going to go backwards and create even more pressure on systems like the one Petra's talking about.
Sure. Well, yeah, I mean, the pressure is increasing and getting enormous because people are accessing the 911 system for basic emergency care because they have no other option.
Petra, thank you very much both for your service and for the phone call.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Let me ask you, we heard both governors, the Republican somewhat more reluctantly perhaps than the Democrat, criticize President Bush's proposal for budget cuts. To what extent is this a partisan issue?
I don't think it's as much a partisan issue as a issue between the governors and the federal government over who pays for what. And I think the big issue here is whether the governors stay united at saying they need more federal assistance with the Medicare and Medicaid dual eligible population, the 6 million people who get coverage from both programs, and rather the federal government looks at its responsibilities and its ability to raise taxes or deficit finance the program that states don't have at this point.
Let's see if we get one more caller in. Peggy's calling. She's been very patient on the line from St. Louis.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling from a very red state, the state of Missouri, and our new governor is 34 years old, has proposed some pretty serious cuts to the Medicaid system here. I'd like to point out the irony in that because the aftermath of the election, all the morality and his religious convictions were brought up. Now, when you reflect back to something like your caller Jackie and the concerns that she had, I wonder about our morality as a citizenship and as leaders when, you know, we are adding to the burden of those people by having them fear that no one will take care of them. I'm a nurse, and I think that health care is something that everybody should have. My other comment is the governor from Ohio and Governor Bush in Florida, their proposals of more managed care, they will not be providing direct services to people like Jackie.
Hey, NPR, this is Dallas.
They will be having more administrative costs, and we need to look at where we want to spend our money. Is it to provide services for people or in the administrative administering of those programs?
Okay. On that last point, Diane Rowland? What you heard there was, in effect, us losing Diane Rowland. So we have Peggy. I'm afraid you're going to have to take your point is the last word on this.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the show, and I think it's really something. You know, we should all hope and pray for Jackie and for ourselves with the state of affairs in medicine like it is now.
We appreciate the phone call, Peggy. Thank you
very much. Thank you.
And we also would like to thank Diane Rowland. The technical problem, certainly no fault of hers. She joined us from the studios of Kaiser here in Washington, D.C., where she's executive director of the Kaiser Commission on Medicaid and the Uninsured.